You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX webradio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Monday edition, and normally I don't do the weather at all because I do national or international, but today I'm going to have a weather story, actually several weather stories, that are causing havoc and concern in California. By now you've probably heard of the Oroville Dam. I used to live in California, and why I've never went up there to look at the dam. It's a rather tall dam. Now, you might get the impression that the dam is going to fail. That's not the situation here, folks. The problem that they face there is there's been a lot of rain and snow, and as a result, the lake behind the dam is full and overflowing. And to release that water, you have spillways. And they have and this story is a little bit complicated, but I'll try to explain it. And I have some diagrams and pictures. And before I forget, the way you listen to this show is go to the pronkpops.wordpress.com companion blog for the show. And if you do that, this is show 837. And I have, under my photograph, you'll have links to this show and the most recent 60 to 80 shows. But you also have a lot of photographs, occasionally cartoons, articles, YouTube videos. And this is very much a developing and breaking story. So I hope that the spillways don't cause any problems. Now, what happened, I heard this first in the news yesterday evening, that they've ordered the evacuation of the surrounding areas. It affects about 200,000 people in a number of, you know, small towns below the dam in the vicinity. This is a rural area, but it's spread out, and there would be, if the spillway gives way and there is a flood, it's not the dam, thank God, but it could be a wall of water 30 feet high, and that would kill people as well as do a lot of damage. So there is a lot of concern, and the river, and I forgot the name of the river, but I'll get it in a minute. This river goes into another dam, and below that is some fisheries. So it could cause a lot of damage downstream if they go over. It's 900 feet's the magic number. If it goes to 901 feet, they're going to have to use the emergency spillway. Now, there are two spillways. They have a concrete spillway, and I have pictures of it. And the problem is, I believe it's February 8th, so 5 days ago, not quite a week. With towards the top third of the spillway, the concrete eroded. It fell in, and subsequently, the next day, on the side of the spillway, that collapsed. So the concrete spillway has problems. And that's the main spillway for the dam. So the question is, do they use the emergency? They do have an emergency spillway. And that's towards the left. It's right next to the concrete spillway that they might very well have to use. And if they do, that means a lot of trees will be force down into the river and go down river. But the concern is if it continues to rain out there, and there is rain in the forecast, you could see that that high level of over 900 feet is reached. And if it is, that's when it's going to cause some serious problem, because then they're forced to use the emergency spillway. They have been checking on the regular spillway and they've been testing it, but there's so much water accumulating behind the dam because of the rain and snow that it's at record high levels. California, for those that are not familiar with the situation in California, going on 5 years up until really quite recently, California was in a drought. The entire state was in a drought. Now, in Texas, we're familiar with that. We had a drought several years ago, same situation, but we've had a lot of rain since, and apparently California is now getting a lot of rain, heavy rain and snow, and it falls in the mountains. Eventually, it goes down into the lakes, and because you have water projects in California extensively, that gets channeled into, you have a number of reservoirs that cities such as San Francisco and others rely on. But the real concern here is if the spillway, whether it's the emergency one or the regular one that they may or may not be using, it's kind of touch and go. They've tried it, and what's happened is the concrete has a big hole in it, and that hole has gotten larger. So they might have no choice but to have to use the emergency one, and the emergency one is not concrete. It's earth. And that means that, and hopefully that can control it and direct it. That's why you have this emergency spillway. But it hasn't been used. It hasn't been used now, and my understanding, it's never been used. So you have that kind of situation. This is the first time that's really will be tested under emergency-type situations, and that's what it's called. It's the emergency spillway. It's a big, unlike the concrete one that you can see and follow, especially when it's been dried or turned off. This is earth. And there's some history here whether or not it should have been made into concrete. That's sort of one Monday morning quarterbacking. The immediate concern is to make sure that the people in the area get out, that we don't want to see a loss of life. And that's what's happening right now. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and I think that really applies here. So I'm really, my prayers and are with the people of California and the people in the immediate area that are affected by this. It's not pleasant to get a phone call or told by the local police, county sheriff, get out, get your belongings, and get out. The question is, where do you go? Because this is rural area. It's northeast of San Francisco. It's immediately north of Sacramento, which is the state capital. I have a map. This is Northern California, by the way. And you can see it's in terms of Sacramento, it's north, slightly northeast. In terms of San Francisco, it's northeast. The major city right below, and it's a major city, and it's a state highway 70, is Yuba City. So that immediate area, and there's a nice little map that I've put on, that's the concern. And you have a lot of people along that highway in towns, in areas that could be affected. So they have to get in a truck or car, pack up as many things as they can, and get on out. The question is, where you go? Well, you go to a local hotel. You want to be away from the potential flood of water. Now, the situation is, as long as it's raining, you have that potential. And the question is, how long is that rain going to continue to fall? Because right now, the lake behind the dam, it's at the highest levels it's ever been. It's over 860 feet, heading towards 900. So it's pretty full, and the pictures show that. And you rely it for electricity and water, primarily water in this case. It's a tall dam. You can see it, and you can see the lakes and the mountains behind it. And there's one picture that's a really interesting picture. It shows all the clouds. So the rain, the snow, and the mountains eventually gets, because of gravity, it flows downhill and eventually reaches this reservoir. Now, what's interesting about this is, what do you do about it? Right now, you can't do much. You don't want your people trying to repair that spillway in the middle of a flood, because things could happen. But ultimately, that's what has to happen. So once this period of intense precipitation, rain and snow, is over, they're going to have to rebuild, obviously, the regular spillway and give serious thought, and it's going to cost money, to the emergency spillway. They really should have two, because you're going to have erosion. These aren't hills. Remember, it's tall, so it's on a hill, and you can see it. It's a nice incline. It looks like ever see the Olympics where you have people go down a ramp ski jumping? Well, it sort of looks like that, what goes down that ramp is what? Or spillway is water, not skiers. Now, in the summer, you can see it where it's not covered with water, and you don't need to use it. So I have several videos, and you can see the damage. Now, what it's related to is the drought in California. Up until a couple of weeks ago, all of California was still in a drought, but it was moderating. However, because of all the recent rain, Northern California in particular is no longer in a drought situation. Matter of fact, most of the state, except for the very southern part, the LA, well, the middle of the state. The worst areas, you can see, there's a dynamic map that I have on my site. It's an interesting map that shows the intensity of the drought. It's a color-coded map, and it suddenly, the drought disappears from Northern California, and it's abnormally dry or moderate for the rest of the state, and there's only a small area, and it's a very dark brown, you can see. So the drought is, for all practical purposes, will be over in the next couple of weeks. I won't say it's completely over, but it's dramatically improved, and that's good news. So there's some bad news here, but there's a lot of good news that because of the weather along the coast and the snow and the rain, and these are record rainfalls and snowfalls, all good news, especially if you're a skier, maybe too much snow. I remember one time I went skiing in late April and May in Colorado, not California. I was on a business trip, interviewed for a job, but had a couple of days, so I went to Aspen. It was still open, still had over 120 feet of pack, but the last day I was there, they closed the slope, so I did the timing was just right. I went home, I believe, on a Sunday. It was a long time ago. But if you're a skier, and I've never really skied in California. All my skiing has been in Colorado, outside of Denver. You have a number of ski resorts. Keystone, I think I first started. I like Copper Mountain. That's probably my favorite ski resort. I just like the layout. I didn't particularly care for Aspen. Now, Aspen has more social life. It's more built up. Copper Mountain, and I haven't been there. I haven't been there in years. I just haven't skied. I haven't had time or the money or something conflicting. And right now, I wouldn't go even if it was a lot of snow. But maybe in the future, I'll go back skiing. It's been quite a while since I've skied because I've just had other priorities that I really had to address. So this helps the skiing, I think, in California, or should, because when you have a drought, there's no skiing. So I think the drought's over, and that's really good for California. And I haven't heard many people discuss that. I was trying to think of the name of the, I should have known this. It's the Feather River that's right below the dam and right below the spillway. And that Feather River is a river that continues downstream. And there's another dam that potentially could be damaged if they have to use the emergency spillway. Because if you use the emergency spillway, what happens? You're going to have a lot of trees uprooted, earth, rocks going down that river at a high rate of speed because a lot of water is behind it, and it could potentially damage that dam. So right now it's wait and see what happens. It's really the weather that I think will have a large determination. If it keeps on raining at a high rate and there's no let up and snowing as well, then they need to keep a very careful eye on this. The real question is when can the people that now are in either hotels or motels or sleeping in one air base, for example, open up their base to a number of people. They could handle up to 400 people. So they need help. And hopefully the state is on this. I'm sure the state is on it. The question is, can they do anything? They're going to have to wait till the rain stops. I don't think you could. I think it's dangerous to put people in there, especially when that water starts rising real quick. You need all the people out of that emergency spillway because it's right next to the concrete spillway. If you're looking at the dam from the bottom, the spillway is the regular spillway is to the left. And there's a big hole in that spillway about a third of the way down. But to the left of that is a much wider spillway. That's the emergency spillway, which they, up to now, have not used. But that's subject to change. And I have an excellent photograph that shows you the early damage. Looking up the spillway, you can see it. That's a photograph of several days ago. That hole has got much larger, and it's eroded the sidewall of the spillway. So they can't really rely on the regular spillway to give, it can give some relief, but their fear is this could get a lot, that hole could really erode. And then the question is, well, do you stop the water flow down the main spillway or you go to the emergency? So there's been damage and you have erosion in the emergency spillway. So it doesn't look good. When you have so much rain, it puts a lot of tension in the hill and the earth starts to move and erode, and it starts to move where? Downhill. And it takes whatever on top of it down with it. The real problem is, though, if they breach that 901-foot mark, water is just going to spill over into the spillway. And that's when you're going to get the wall of water. So if they have too much more rain and it gets at that level, you're going to have, it's just going to be a continuous flow until you get below the roughly 900 foot mark. So stay tuned. There should be more information. Now, I wanted to say a little bit about the drought. I think for practical purposes, in Northern California, the drought's over. For the entire California state, for most of it, it's definitely moderated. And I think by next week, 10 days, for all practical purposes, the drought should be over. And that's good news. It should be over. Farmers need the relief. They need the water. Farmers need water. And there is water. And that's a very much a political situation. But you need water to grow things. And that's where we get a lot of our vegetables, wine, is that San Joaquin Valley that runs down the middle of California. So I'm happy that they're getting the relief from the drought. And it's good news, bad news situation. Now, what's ironic about this is Governor Brown, who's been very, very critical of Mr. Trump. They don't like each other, to put it mildly. And remember, California today is largely what I would call a single-party state. I know they have a Republican Party. But the problem with California and a single-party state, largely Democrat, it's Democrat-controlled. It voted overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. That's where she got the lion's share of her votes. Jerry Brown had to ask Donald Trump, and I think he's going to definitely respond to this positively. He wanted the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, to declare a major disaster in California. Well, I think that's the situation. Now, why the governor is doing that is because of all the rain. The rain and snow has resulted, people have died from it. And should we have a major problem with those spillway and you have a wall of water, why many people are out, I'm sure there's still people there that didn't get out, and you could have a significantly higher loss of life. So I'm glad that the governor asked Donald Trump, and I'm sure Donald Trump is going to respond positively to this and instruct FEMA to declare California a disaster. I think it's a disaster despite the weather, because they're in big financial, the state as well as many cities are in financial crisis. They're very much like the federal government. They've spent too much money, and now they got a problem, and they overregulate, overtax, and when you do that, what happens? Businesses leave the state. They're killing the goose that laid the golden eggs. They've done it to themselves. Short-sighted economic policies. It's a very liberal, I would say it's a far leftist state. They just have overspent. And hopefully there's some backlash. Until California is at least a two, if not a three-party state, I don't think you're going to see much change. And that's the problem. Once one party has a lock on the governorship and both houses, they can do what they want. And that's what they do. And it doesn't matter whether it's Democrat or Republican. It does matter to the people, but if you try to vote and you're outvoted. Now, why am I focusing in on California? They very much are a sanctuary state, and with many sanctuary cities, they have literally opened the borders, and that's their problem. They relied on cheap labor. Remember, California is an agricultural state. So is Texas. And where you have a large agricultural interest, there is a need for agricultural workers. So I'm not surprised at all that California encourages illegal aliens to come to the state. They've had a problem for decades. And because of the high taxes and the regulations, businesses leave, people leave, they can't afford to live in California. And you have business interests taking advantage of the illegal aliens. And it lowers the wages for who? Yep, you're right, the American citizens that live there. You know, I like California. If it weren't for the political situation and the disaster it's in financially, I'd move there. I've considered it several times. I like the Northern California area. I'm not particularly fond of the LA area. I've been to LA. And not too long ago, well, over 10 years ago, I was seriously exploring an opportunity that presented itself. I ultimately turned it down because it was the Santa Barbara area, and that's just a very, very expensive area to live in. So I like the state. I like the weather. It has terrific weather. Although in Berkeley in the winter, it can get a little chilly because you get that breeze from the ocean coming through the Golden Gate and heading to San Francisco, then to Oakland and the Berkeley area. So California, financially, that's a bigger disaster than this weather. I'm glad that the drought's over, but they need to get their financial house in order. And you cannot correct, I would say, 50 years of just simply overspending. And it's not just on the state level, it's the county level, and it's the city level. And Texas, why, in much better shape, we've run up debts. And that's why I say the problem today is at all levels of government, they all suffer from what I call SADs, spending addiction disorder. They just made the government sector too big. And when you do that and don't control spending, you run up large debt. And ultimately, that has to be paid off. Why the states and the cities can't do that, the federal government can, and it's done it under Republicans and Democrats. That's the number one crisis. And until the finances of this country at all levels are addressed, it's not going to get any better. You can't continue doing what you're doing because it does blow up. You know, I was listening to a talk show. Someone asked the question, who's going to bail out the United States? The answer is nobody's going to bail out the United States. And if you ask me, who's going to bail out California? No one's going to bail out California. No one's going to bail out Texas or other states. Texans don't. You know, right now, for example, Donald Trump wants to improve infrastructure. Well, we've had a gas tax, federal and state. And while we have, I think, average, some would say above average roads in Texas, because of the growth of population, and it's been dramatic because I've been in the I left the Air Force in the fall of 1978, and I moved to Fort Worth in November of 78. And I've been in Texas since 78. Yeah, I've gone on business trips out of the state, but I've largely lived in either Fort Worth or Dallas, and I've seen it dramatically increase in population. And when that happens, you have to expand your infrastructure, primarily roads and bridges. And the temptation, and I think Trump is going to fall for this temptation, I'm not for this, by the way, is to have toll roads that never get paid off. You have this private-public partnership. I'm against private-public partnerships. That smacks of crony capitalism. If you need a highway or major road, issue the bonds, pay off the bonds. It might take 20, 30 years, but at the end of the 30-year period or however long the duration of the bond is, then the public has the highway. And that, for many, many years, was the way we did it in Texas. Not anymore. There was a great temptation, especially a governor's, to do this private-public tollways. I'm totally against it. Now, if a private entity wants to build a road or a railroad or whatever, fine, do it. Don't come to the public and ask for money or ask for a partnership. Because what it ends up happening, oh yeah, you get the road, you definitely get the toll road, but it never ends. It never ends. You're paying it forever. And that's the point. We have many roads today that were built a long time ago. A lot of foresight, and the tax money, mainly from gasoline, but also bond issues, went to pay for those roads, and now we have them. And they need repairs, and we have tax money that repairs them. That's the way it should be. The temptation is have the federal government do it, or provide block grants, or have a joint public-private-state situation. Who knows best? The people closest to the problem. I know Dallas, but I know very little about any other city. I've been in several other cities in Texas, but I really don't follow it. I don't know. I don't travel their roads every day. You want the local community. They have the most insight, knowledge, understanding of what the infrastructure problems, challenges are of the area. Whether I think Dallas has better insight than Fort Worth does of their problems. Dallas knows Dallas. The people of Dallas knows Dallas. The people of Fort Worth know Fort Worth. They are the ones that should pay for the roads. It's a local problem is what I'm trying to say. Force it down to the lowest level. That could be a city or a county, or it could be a state. If it's truly a state highway that runs, keep in mind, Texas is a huge state, and there's long distances between cities. In essence, what's happening today is when I buy a gallon of gasoline, I'm paying, and I forget what the tax rate is. I should know this off the top of my head, but I don't pay much attention. I'm looking at the total price, and that's another reason to go to the fair tax, but let me set that aside. The people that are in urban areas, Dallas, Arlington, Fort Worth, Houston, Austin, your major cities in Texas, what are they doing? They're subsidizing who? These nice rural highways. And the people in the rural areas, they like it. They like those nice state highways. See, that's... And you got to say, well, you might have to go there. Yeah, I remember one time I was working for a company, and I had to, well, we had, the company had to deliver some computer equipment, and I had to do some basic training for them on a new software package. And I was fairly new to the company, by the way. So I went to Lubbock, Texas. That's a long, 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 long drive. I think I got on I-30. Just head west. Just keep driving west. And then you make a right turn and you go north. So you drive and drive and drive. You don't miss that turnoff, by the way, because you can keep going west and you'll end up in far west Texas. So keep an eye for the turnoff and then drive and drive and drive north. And I stopped at a gas station to get some gas. In the middle of nowhere, it's desert, folks. It's the middle of nowhere. Busy stop, because that's the last gas station before Lubbock. So then I started to drive north. And you see these big, you want to know where these wind turbines are in Texas? Well, drive that. I saw several going west, but now I was going north, and boy, they're in the middle of nowhere, and there are these big turbines, and some of them are running, some of them aren't. It was so-so in terms of the wind. But I was getting concerned. It was getting evening, you know, the light is going down. I said, man, I must be close to Lubbock. Where is it? And suddenly, boom, it pops up. There's a city. Texas Tech is there. That was, I forget how many hours I drove. I would say, I want to guess 5 hours. 5 hours straight driving. Except for that, I call it a pit stop, a stop to get some gas. Oh, I didn't make it on one tank. I knew I wasn't going to make it on tank. So they're long. The point of the story is it's long distances between cities in Dallas. Now, the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex has millions of people. It's three cities, huge cities, but it's spread out. Oh, yeah, we have our skyscraper buildings, tall buildings in the core downtown Dallas, as well as Fort Worth. Not so much in Arlington, but it's spread out. And because it's spread out, you need highways. and we pay taxes, and we expect those taxes, together with any bond issues that the people approve, to go to the highways. What I'm leading up to is I'm not for the federal government, except where it's truly for the entire nation, getting involved in infrastructure projects. That's a boondoggle. That's where crony capitalism comes in. And he's getting resistance from conservatives as well as classical liberals in the Republican Party, the people that are for limited government. Now, some would say, well, give him a little money to have his trophy projects. We're broke, folks. If New York needs to fill its potholes, have New York people spend their money filling potholes. We have our own potholes in Texas, and they need to be filled, and many of them have. And that's the point of the story. Let the local government closest to the problem, where the people are and know the problem, let them determine, first of all, do they want to spend money on it and how much, because they're the ones that benefit. In other words, you should do a cost-benefit analysis, and you shouldn't go hat in hand to the federal government and ask for a bailout. The American people don't want bailouts. And remember the Tea Party movement, what was that about? The American people were incensed, outraged with the bailouts. And most of it was to bail out the investment and commercial banks in New York City. Oh, they made a fortune, but when they screwed up and we went into the Great Recession, they came hat in hand for a bailout. Now, many of you will say, well, they paid it back. That's not the way the free enterprise market capitalist system works. You see, for most, not all, but for most businesses, small, medium, and large, there are no bailouts. We're not expecting a bailout, nor would a business owner ask for it. You see, what's happening is who gets taken care of? It's politics. It's crony capitalism. And that's what the bailouts are. And who gets taken care of? The ones that make the large campaign contributions to the Democrat and Republican Party. So I'm not for bailouts. I'm not for subsidies at all. That's why I told the story that what am I doing right now? I'm paying subsidies for the highways in rural highways and roads, county roads, country roads, however you want to describe them, in rural Texas. If there is a need to link cities, that's the job, should be the job of the state. But what happens is people living in urban areas and suburbia are largely paying for the roads in rural areas. They're rural areas because most people don't go there. That's the last time I was in Lubbock, Texas. I remember one time on another trip, I flew out and flew back, went to Midland, Odessa, rented a car there. Middle of nowhere, desert, a lot of oil wells. There's money there. There's money to be made. The takeaway is this. The people in an area are the best ones to decide how their tax money is spent. And those are the people that should make the decisions locally. And highways, infrastructure, school buildings, airports. I can remember first coming to Texas. That was the early days of the Dallas-Fort Worth airport. And I was impressed. I was stunned. It was a huge, huge airport. And it was a compromise to build it between Dallas and Fort Worth. It's in the north of Arlington. And it was impressive. And it shows the wisdom of the people living in Texas. They knew they needed an airport to attract business, so they voted the bond issues, and the airport was a huge construction project, huge. And it's been expanded upon and obviously improved. It's now a major international hub for airlines around the world, not just in the United States. There are payoffs or benefits, but it should be a local, whether it's a city, a county, or state, the people in that geographic area that get the lion's share of the benefits should be the ones that finance it. And you are going to take a risk. The problem you get into is when you have these red flags for me is anytime says, well, it's a public-private partnership. See, my attitude is this. If it's such a terrific business proposition, then the business should go get the financing itself. It shouldn't need a city or county or state. Conversely, if it's a project that benefits the entire city, county, or state, then maybe it should be a public project. And what we're largely talking about is roads, infrastructure. Roads, schools, you know, bridges, roads, bridges, schools, airports, maybe. Usually you already have airports. It's what are you trying to do? Now, Now, occasionally, for example, Alliance in Fort Worth was used to be a SAC air wing base. We still have some military there, but it's largely now turned into commercial freight. You need planning, and you need to do cost-benefit studies. But what I'm real resistant to, and we're going to see what happens with the Trump administration, I'm not a fan of the federal government financing paying for infrastructure. And what Trump wants to do is these private-public partnerships. Whenever I hear that word, I think of the C word, corruption. Crony capitalism, corruption. It's not that there aren't benefits of those projects. There clearly are. But who is going to end up paying for it and the lion's share of it? You know, I don't want the people of Texas's tax money going to pay for filling potholes. I keep using that example, or building roads in New York. If New York needs more roads and bridges and maintain and improve their infrastructure, by God, it's up to the responsibility of the people of New York to do that, Mr. Trump, not the federal governments. So that's a shoe that hasn't dropped. We're probably next year this time probably be talking about it. Now, the one other thing, and this is the third story. I truly believe that Donald Trump will and should declare California a disaster area. It is. A lot of people are affected by this weather, and I think that's the smart political as well as economic thing to do. But I'm not for any bailout of California in any way. Providing emergency relief and what FEMA is tasked to do, no problem with. But if he wants a lot of money to repair, let's say, the dam, no, that's California's problem. And the best way to handle it is, again, cost-benefit. There's obviously cost involved, but a lot of people benefit, so it makes sense, and it should be repaired. I think they're going to repair it. They're not going to walk away from it. Should have been done. This is more than Monday morning quarterbacking, probably a long time ago. But things happened. I don't know why the... Well, I do know, because I have studied geology, and when you're on a steep hill and there's a lot of water, the earth moves, and you have slides, and California's notorious for this. It's not that they don't know about mudslides. See, most of the time, it's nice. It's dry. You don't have the rain. But in the winter in California, especially in the mountains, but in certain parts, the western part, you're going to get a lot of precipitation, a lot of rain that you need. That's Mother Nature. That's weather. And that's good. You need water to grow plants. And people need food to eat. And that's a big, big moneymaker for California. And that's one of the reasons they allow open their borders. They need agricultural workers. But you need to weigh the cost and benefits of opening your borders, because there's a welfare cost attached when you have open borders. A lot of people think that, well, the illegal aliens are paying some taxes. That's true. But if you look at the welfare payments, and they're huge, and they shouldn't be getting them, but they're getting them. There's a big cost involved, and it's not just welfare, it's schools. I'm very much believe in immigration if it's controlled and if it's legal. I'm adamantly opposed to any, and I mean any, illegal aliens in the country. A nation has to control its borders. And the irony is, do you think Mexico controls its border? You better believe it does, because it has a flood of people on its southern border coming from rather repressive regimes in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. People flee. And the Mexican government doesn't treat people breaking into their country very well. It's a felony. They put them in jail and send them back. All I'm asking is the United States government enforce the law. And that's what the American people are asking. Enforce the law and make it very, very clear we're expecting the Mexican government to take care of its own people. The reason why Mexicans are fleeing into the United States is for jobs, is to raise their standard of living. And I'll probably get into the next show. What's happening is Donald Trump signed a number of executive orders, and now what is happening? Immigration law is being enforced. And guess who doesn't like that? The illegal aliens that have broken the law that are here. You mean they can arrest me and send me back? Yes, that's the law, and that's been the law for decades. The American people are demanding that immigration law be enforced, and the lying lunatic left and their allies, fellow travelers, and big lie media are writing story after story. They're separating the mother from her family. Excuse me. Every day, across this nation, primarily men, but some women, are sent to jail or sent to prison, and they're separated from their families, if they have any, and most do. And if they're going to prison, it's going to be several years before they see their family again, other than for visits. I'm not buying this argument. You're breaking up families. Excuse me. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time. They're breaking this country. That's a misdemeanor in the United States. In Mexico, it's a felony and a prison sentence. And then they're getting false identification. That is a felony in the United States. Buying fraudulent documents, primarily Social Security cards, which is needed to get a job, driver's license, some cases birth certificates. And then they're working here illegally. So they've committed, and every day they work here, they're committing another crime. So as far as I'm concerned, and I've said it in past show, all the illegal aliens that are currently here living and working are criminal illegal aliens. All of them, Mr. Trump. Now, Mr. Trump wants to make a distinction between those that have a long record, criminal record, of violent crime. Violent crime is like assault, rape, murder, or violent crime, spousal abuse. Who's against not sending people that have that type of record back to their country of origin? Nobody is. Or very, very few people are. As a matter of fact, the American people are demanding it. Demanding it. But I don't make that distinction. Let me make it clear. You have priorities. So you obviously deport and remove all aliens that have criminal records if it doesn't matter whether the crimes were in their country of origin or in the United States. Send them back to their country of origin. That should be the priority, and that's what they're working on right now. You're going to hear story after story after story of people being sent back. What you got to understand, they're felons. They have a criminal record. Actually, they all are felons because invariably they've all got documents and are working here, and those are all felonies. But you're going to see more and more of, you're going to hear a lot of sob stories. It doesn't faze me because the American people have said, wait a minute. It's costing me money. It's costing me jobs. And yes, there are accidents, crimes being committed by the illegal aliens. We want it stopped. All the American people are saying we believe in the rule of law. We favor legal immigration. We do not want illegal immigration. We want the laws of the lands in force. That's what they want. And yes, they want a secure border, whether it's a two-fence with a road well-patrolled with technology or a wall, whatever, a barrier that stops the invasion, the flood. Talking of floods, this flood is of what? People, drugs, criminals coming into the country. We want it stopped. That's what the American people are asking. They want our laws enforced. And that means by not only the U.S. Border Patrol along the borders, but also ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement. That's reasonable. That's what they're expecting. And Donald Trump knows he has to deliver on that promise or he won't be reelected. You're already seeing news stories. Oh, ICE is in the neighborhood and they're arresting people. Oh, my God. Excuse me. That's what they should have been doing for 15 to 20 years. And if they were, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in today. So let the big lie media have as many sob stories as they want. I'm not going to shed one tear for them. And I'm not cold-hearted. I'm mad at the political elites in Washington, Democrats and Republicans, for not doing their own job and insisting on the enforcement of the laws. And the reason they're not doing it, the Democrats want power, and their way to power is how make sure that all those illegal aliens get citizenship and then become registered Democrats. And then we can have a single Democratic Party across the land. Hasn't worked out too well in California, has it? The American people are saying enough is enough. Enforce immigration law. And if you don't want to do it, we'll find and elect representatives and senators that do. And the Republicans are just as bad, quite frankly. There are some good Republicans, but they don't have a majority, and they're certainly not in the leadership. That's why ultimately the American people will support a new party, call it the Independent Party. The name is not important because they have been lied to, deceived, distracted. betrayed by both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And they're not going to sit still for it. And as long as they have the right to vote and exercise it, they will primary politicians that are for open borders or more concerned with illegal aliens. And they'll do it across the country. And eventually, maybe California will see the light. You see, there are many American citizens, many of them Hispanic, that don't like what's going on. And legal immigrants, in particular, don't like what's going on. The majority of the American people favor limited immigration into this country. And not the million plus that we have now, by the way. I would say most Americans would go, okay, what's been the average for over 200 years? It's about 200. Up until 1990, it was 225,000. Fine with me. Stick with 225,000. I can even be more generous. Let's make it, I said 225,000. I meant to say 250,000. Now, my proposal, and I've sort of modified it, that should be the minimum every year, 250,000. I want a range of between 250,000 to 500,000, where we have a very low unemployment situation, 3% or less, 500,000, fine with me. However, as the unemployment rate goes above 3%, for every percentage it goes above 3%, subtract 50,000 from it. So let's say where Trump has a boom, the unemployment rate is 3% or less, 500,000 can come in. That's half that are coming in today. And believe you me, the owner-donor class, the people that want cheap, compliant labor, they don't want that. They want it to double and triple. That's what they are all about. And that's what many Republicans are all about. Oh, let's do this legally. Let's dramatically increase the number of legal immigrants. I'm for legal immigration as long as it's limited and controlled. I don't believe in throwing open the borders and allowing millions, and they want to really increase it to 3 million a year. That is the ultimate goal. What I'm saying is a million's too many already. The American people don't want a million. It's the people that want cheap, compliant labor that wanted a million and made it a million back in 1990 and have caused this problem, flat or decreasing household incomes. I know what's going on. I know the game that's being played. So when unemployment in the United States is very, very, very low, under 3%, 500,000, fine. As it increases, every 1% it increases, you decrease that number by 50,000. So if it's 4%, it's 450,000. If it's 5%, it's 400,000. If it's 6%, it's 50,000 less. Ultimately, you get to the lower limit of 250,000, and that's when the unemployment rate is 8% or higher. And usually when it's 8% or higher, we're in a recession. We are. That seems like a reasonable proposal, but that's just my suggestion. That's my opinion. That is something the American people would support. What they don't support is unlimited illegal invasion by millions of illegal aliens. I'm not going to give another immigration show, although I've got on it. The reason I'm talking about it is you're hearing in the news, both print and television, the fact that it looks like ICE, and you haven't heard these stories in a long, long, long time, I'm saying years, is now enforcing immigration law. And people that are illegal aliens are panicking. Good. As far as I'm concerned, good. You shouldn't be here. Please go home. Got the message? Please, I'm trying to be polite, please go home. You're not wanted here. Get in your car, pickup truck, and go home. Or get on a plane and go home. We have a new sheriff in town. He's called President Trump, and he's going to enforce the law, and so is the Attorney General Jeff Sessions. That's what the American people are demanding. That's what they expect. And the Republican Party and President Trump better deliver on these promises. Otherwise, they're going to be primaried and voted out of office. And eventually, the lying lunatic left and big lie media will eventually get the message as the Democratic Party loses more and more races and becomes a party of a few cities on the East and West Coast. And that ultimately, I think, is going to be their fate. It's not that they will totally disappear, but they will be confined to sanctuary cities. that will not be getting any federal money. And that's the other thing that the American people are demanding. I'm sick of it. I live in Dallas and have lived in Dallas since 84. I moved over from Fort Worth. Started working here earlier than that, but moved over in 84. Been here a long time. And I've seen Dallas dramatically grow, change, I think mostly to the positive. But I still remember around 2000, suddenly you saw more and more and more illegal aliens here. That wasn't the way it was in 1984 or earlier in Fort Worth. It wasn't. It's not that we didn't have illegals. We never had the numbers. What's changed fundamentally is both political parties threw open the doors and would not enforce the law vigorously. I didn't say they didn't enforce the law. They did some window dressing. But now we're going back to enforcing the law, and the lying lunatic left is going hysterical. Good. Let them go hysterical. We're not going to coddle criminals. That's what they are. They're criminals. Criminal illegal aliens. It's all of them, folks. It's all of them. Oh, we'll start with the real bad apples and work our way down. It's going to take 10 years at least. It's not going to happen overnight. But we need to have more and more of these stories. What we really need to have is the owners of these businesses that hire the illegal aliens also arrested. That's when you know we're really serious. I'm waiting to see Donald Trump do that. I don't think it's going to happen, folks. I still have a trust issue with Mr. President Trump, and I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I'll say so. But I think he's going to go along with the Republicans and go for touchback amnesty. In other words, give citizenship to many and most of the illegal aliens that are here. I think it's a big double cross. And should he do it, he won't get a second term, and he'll go down as in history as a betrayer of the American people. Hasn't happened yet, but a lot of people are watching Mr. Trump in particular in the area of immigration and enforcement of immigration law. So if that's the cute little game he's playing with the Republicans, it's not going to work. And if the Republicans are stupid enough to, if that's what they're doing, and they are, the leadership is trying to do, there won't be a Republican Party or a Democratic Party. They both will be very small minority parties. Now, it might take 20 years or longer, but it will happen. The American people might be slow, but they're not stupid, and they know they're being lied to by the leadership. We have a very divided country, and the elites are very much today, unfortunately, against the will, the needs, the concerns of the American people. So I'm watching. We'll see what happens, and I'll have more to say about this probably later in the week. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.